Today's show is brought to you by Solution Aversion Associates. Need to make a lifestyle change, but just don't want to? Solution Aversion Associates is your one-stop shop for rationalization, denial, and alternative facts. Call 1-800-WHO-CARES right now to begin doing nothing about everything. Yes, that's right. Take bold inaction to maintain the status quo. Solution Aversion Associates. Operators are standing by. Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shana Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
We are recasting the narrative of our shared common life together using the lenses of philosophy and theology.
And occasionally, psychology.
Indeed.
Trying to reshape, recast our social narrative to break it free from the binaries of economics and politics, which occupies so much of our conversation in the public square.
If you want to learn more about What in God's Name, you can check out our website, whatingods.com. There you will find a little trailer, and you can learn more about What in God's Name. You can help us out with our project, Increasing Our Footprint. Subscribe to What in God's Name on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We also, Shana, have a new possibility for financial support. You can Venmo us. Like, if you like a particular show and you say, those people deserve a cup of coffee, send us $5 on Venmo. You can find us on Venmo. Our username, or whatever they call it, is at Ribeye Media. One word, ribeye, like the steak, media. We also give a shout out to our listeners in Pullman, Washington. I get to see Shana on our podcast platform where people are listening to What in God's Name. There was a posse from Pullman, Washington recently. So
that is so awesome. Pullman.
Yes, that is so.
Huh. Okay.
As you can tell by our sound quality, Shana is on remote today. And so, you know what, Shana? That makes me sad because we do not get to spin the spinny wheel.
Oh, bummer. Unless you want to run downstairs, give it a spin, come back up and tell us where it landed.
I think we'll just give it a break today.
We'll give it a break this week. Okay.
Just give it a little rest, which is
all right.
Which is just fine.
So, no spinny wheel this morning. What do you got for us today, Chris? Where into what vast wilderness are we headed?
We've been spending some time, Shana, as you know, and as our listeners know, considering the mental health of our society in pandemic time. Not just individualized understandings of mental health, but society's mental health. So not just introspection, but looking outward, looking outward into the broader world. What deeper stories can we tell about our shared common life together, given all the signs of mental and spiritual and moral distress and disease in our culture? And so we do recommend have a listen to this series that we've been doing. And today is the culmination. Shana, there's an article I wanted to discuss with you that I feel, to my mind, brings us around in a nice circle and brings us to a conclusion. Now, I hesitate. I'm a little trepidatious when I say that to you because the things that I find fascinating, sometimes you do not, and so I am prepared for that possibility. That is the way it goes.
That is rare. That is a rare occurrence, Chris.
And the other thing is that I will lead us, and Shana will respond, and I'm imagining that you will respond because you do beautifully. But if you don't, it's going to be a short show.
When have you known me not to respond?
Exactly. So, Shana, when I do some research into this question about mental health and our society's mental health, most of the way that question is framed these days, at least from what I can see, is the lens is always the individual, and the way the social is brought into the equation is often to say, what is deeply intuitive, and I think just true, that if you want to be healthy psychologically, spiritually, mentally, as an individual, you should be connected to other people. You know, that's basically the truth that I find. And I guess I find that interesting to a degree, but not deeply interesting, because it doesn't really address society's health. The frame is always the individual, and the social then is kind of instrumental to the individual's health. And what I really, again, what I'm gravitating to, what I want to think about and reflect on theologically and psychologically, is our society's health. And so I found an article that does this and helps us to see this way. And so I found this article. It's called The Meaning of Social Health. The Meaning of Social Health. And the author is a man from Oxford University. L.J. Barnes is his name. And his thing is this, Shana. Come along with me on this journey, if you would, Shana.
I'm here, Chris.
The beginning of his article is mental health and normality. That what we consider to be mental health is often the same as what is normal. And so then he goes on to this little demonstration, this little thought experiment. He talks about how do we judge what is normal? And you might imagine the familiar bell curve. Our listeners will be familiar with a bell curve, where most people are kind of in the middle, and that's the height of the curve, and that's the normal place. And then there are the extremes on either end, and in this kind of bell curve model, that's abnormal. And he uses this cute little example of changing your sheets and flipping your mattress. He says, like, if you flip your mattress and change your sheets once a week, that's probably kind of around normal. But if you do it every day, you're an outlier that is on one extreme and you are not so normal. And if you, he says, burn your mattress and sheets when you want to change them, that's on the other extreme. And by the way, perhaps psychopathological.
I would have thought the opposite would have been you never change them, but okay, I'll work with his example.
Yeah, me too. But I think he was trying to be somewhat humorous in an academic article, which I appreciated, I have to say. I thought that was a nice touch. So he connects this sense of normalcy with social acceptability, which again is intuitive. What is socially acceptable is, on first glance, that which is normal. But then he said, then he raises the interesting question to me, which is, how do we evaluate, place value on that which is normal? How do we assign praiseworthiness or blameworthiness on particular kinds of behavior that may be acceptable socially and considered normal, but from a different perspective, from an evaluative, from a normative kind of questioning stance, may not be good or healthy or praiseworthy. So he says this. He says, before we can make a judgment on whether some norm is good or bad, we must have some way of assessing the value of the normal behavior, independent of its normality. So basically, he's saying just because something's normal doesn't mean it's good. And so here he says the notion of social health comes in. Social health comes in as a necessary complement to the notion of mental health. He says, in the abstract, we might agree that where a social order is healthy, then the norms will be healthy also. But societies are just as liable to disease as persons.
Mm. Mm.
And so in one sense, he says, perhaps they are more so. And he goes on and gives a little bit more on that. But I wanted to pause there because to me, that distinction is crucial. That, well, there's more to be said about it, but let me stop there and see if you have at this point any reactions. I do have more to read because I think he does this elegantly. He sets out certain things, but
yeah, no, I mean, my immediate reaction is that it's almost obvious, and I think probably something that most of us have thought about, but he articulates it. And by articulating it, you know, shines a light on it and brings it forward, which is really, really interesting.
So let me just add this. He says, it seems, therefore, that we have to distinguish two kinds of mental health and two kinds of mental disorder. Okay, here we go. Mental health, so an individual, right? An individual who is healthy mentally, spiritually, may consist either in adjustment to a good norm, okay, so that's the when society is healthy and you are adjusted to a good society, or he says, in maladjustment to a bad norm. So if you are maladjusted to a sick society, you are mentally healthy.
Okay.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah. And then the mental disorder, he says, there are two kinds of that. Either mental disorder is when you are adjusted to a bad norm. So you're a well-adjusted person to a sick society.
Mm-hmm.
Or you are maladjusted to a good norm. You are not well-adjusted to a healthy society.
Right. So first we have to be able to evaluate what constitutes a good or bad society. We have to be able to evaluate the society first. So you'd say, well, you know, the people who fell in lockstep with Hitler were well-adjusted to a maladjusted society.
Exactly.
And it's interesting because if you want to draw the line, you know, forward to our current society, or certainly, you know, what happened during the time that Trump was president, was that a whole bunch of people became healthily aligned to a really dysfunctional way of thinking and being.
Yeah, like you got to get into the weeds and lay out criteria for what counts as a healthy society. I mean, let's just start with...
And in like manner, you've got to be able to get your head up out of the weeds periodically to do the overall assessment. In other words, many of us, I am just thinking of, many of us have had to adapt to COVID over the last 2 years, how it's changed how we've worked, how we function, where we're willing to go, where we're not willing to go. Though we made adaptations based on a situation that was unfolding, a potentially deadly situation that was unfolding. And now as we, you know, begin to have a little bit more space to make different choices, I'm noticing that there are folks who are having a difficult time even thinking about making that difficult choice, even thinking about coming out of isolation, being in a room with other people. And so they've adapted well to, you know, the time of pandemic. And now it may be too soon to say we're coming out of this, but certainly the situation on the ground has changed. CDC guidelines have changed, but it may be very difficult for other people to make the transition. It may be difficult for some of us to make that transition. It may just be too scary for a while. So there you've got people who were well adapted to what was literally a sick system. And now, but until you pick your head up and take the balcony view of what's going on, you know, we don't know always when something is sick and when something is healthy. That's my, you know, off the cuff response.
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting, and it just causes me to pause to reflect on that. I think it's, I wouldn't have thought of that, but I think your observation, yeah, it's right online.
Chris, who was the author of the article?
Yes. So This is a good moment to say that this is the article is by L.J. Barnes.
B-A-R-N-E-S?
B-A-R-N-E-S. And in the spirit of we don't break the news, we break it down.
Yeah.
This article was written in 1961.
Oh. Wow. 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 Are you kidding me?
I thought I would save that for you for a particular moment.
Wow.
Like we are hot on the news here on What in God's Name.
Yeah, I know, really, huh? Oh my God, that's wild. And it makes sense, though. I mean, when you think about like the amount of social upheaval and unrest that was, you know, again, going on in all quadrants. You know, it was from civil rights to the Vietnam War to a real surge in feminism. And, you know, the social order was really being flipped over on its head. So it might have been a good time to contemplate, to start wondering what of this is healthy.
Yeah, I think there was even more of a willingness back in that time to question the social order.
Well, yes. Wasn't everybody driving around with the bumper stickers that said question authority?
I mean, this is 61, though, Shana. I mean, this isn't like 69. This is so he was way, I think he was ahead. He was ahead of that curve, but he was anticipating that.
But it is such the notion of it, like as I'm sitting here and it's dawn, you know, it's sort of sinking in, it's getting into the tissue and the muscle fiber. The question itself is fascinating, is how in order to evaluate normative behavior, you have to know what it is you're evaluating it against. And if the society itself is sick, then those of us who occur as malfeasance may in fact be the healthiest. Yeah, it's what I've said for the longest time. I'm not antisocial. I'm actually psychologically just really healthy.
I want to ask a question about Jesus, because I do, but so I'm saying that now to remind me to like just place a little placeholder
all right,
in
I'm,
that.
I'm making a note. Yes,
please write down the word Jesus on your.
I just wrote it down.
But apropos of what you just said, this last part I want to read from L.J. Barnes. He says mental health can never be found in conformity to norms which, however strongly supported by public consensus, are unwholesome or unworthy or even unexamined. He says, this view has been cardinal in the moral tradition of European civilization ever since the sophists and tragedians of ancient Greece first framed the doubt, quote, what if the multitude is bent on evil or is blind? There are many men, but that's the quote. There are many men who are evil but seem righteous. What if the man who is righteous seems to be evil? Which leads me right to Jesus. What if the man who is righteous seems to be evil?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say, what is it that we say that we value? And is there consensus on the value? Probably not. All by way of saying evaluating someone's mental health against the mental health of the society in which they're in sounds really great and necessary and is probably very difficult to do because you're probably not going to get a whole lot of agreement.
Yeah.
It kind of would depend on who you're talking to, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it would seem to me difficult to have a society that holds together that does not have some basic agreements as to what is good and what is bad, or if there is disagreement, which there always will, then some agreed process towards working through those differences. We know as leaders of communities that difference of opinion, passionately held, if approached with a good spirit, a spirit of learning, collaboration, listening, really, really hard stuff to do, but we know that that can lead to a better, more robust, more connected community. From 30,000 feet, it's easy to say, like if you're part of a sick society and you're adjusted to it, then that's not good. But then we get into the details of what makes a sick society. Some people are going to say one thing and some people are going to say another.
Well, it harkens back to that sort of that need for a common narrative, or the need for societies, groups, organizations, what have you, to have some agreement about what the purpose of the game is. There has to be some place that we all agree. So, you know, I'm thinking about QAnon folks, right? And you have the QAnon folks who have gone into down a rabbit hole into some altered state of reality. If they are part of a family that has not gone down the same rabbit hole, then those families are very concerned about them, yes? And some families have even turned in members of their family who went down that rabbit hole so far so as to show up on January 6th of 21 to storm the Capitol building. Some families, you know, are still connected enough to the mores of our culture to say that was fundamentally not good. And even though within their ranks of QAnon believers, that behavior maybe have been totally acceptable. Under the larger narrative, it's not. But there again, and you and I have talked about this a lot, is where we get into such precarious domain, you know, where reality itself is being questioned. Because once we get into sort of the post-truth realm, what is so? How do you evaluate that people are operating based on a completely alternative set of facts? That's not enough to tear me away from Barnes's fundamental assertion, which is that you cannot evaluate the mental health of an individual as normal or abnormal without also simultaneously evaluating the mental health of the society against which it's being viewed. I don't know if that just took us way off track.
No, that was beautiful.
Jesus exploration thing in a way?
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go. So as I was thinking about Jesus and his story in context with Barnes's article, Jesus, here's my reading of who he was and is and can be. He points to the healthy society, his way. We long for it, those of us who follow Jesus in the Lord's Prayer, we are praying for this, basically the healthy society, God's will being
done. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, yeah.
On earth. And so the piece that's intriguing to me, Shana, about Jesus is how he stands in both worlds. He stands in the world that is broken and fallen. He's very aware of the dangers of that, and in fact, was put to death by it. And he stood, and it's not a but, it's an and he stood in the vision of God's goodwill for all creation to be in shalom, in peace.
Isn't that sort of a requirement of any great leader?
I think so.
I mean, because when I think about, you know, I could say the same thing about somebody like Martin Luther King. I could say the same thing about Moses. I could say the same thing about, you know, the prophet Muhammad. May peace be upon him. I could say, you know, having the ability to stand fully and consciously in the face of something that is broken, that is sick, that is not good, not healthy. And to be able to stand in it, not in a place of denial, but to stand fully in it and say, you know, I have been to the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I've seen it. And it's that way. To not lose sight of what is good. Those are the great leaders who in the middle, you know, of some of the foggiest times where people couldn't see beyond the nose on their own faces, that somebody came by and said, there is something more out there and we can get there.
And I would simply add, and I imagine you agree, that's what those of us who are not great leaders, we're called to be fully human being, you know, fully human humans, wherever we inhabit our lives, we're called to do that too, to have our feet in both, to be connected to the pain of the world, our own pain, and have this vision of the healthy society.
And I guess I would take that even one step further and say the capacity to be a great leader is probably in way many more of us than we would be willing to acknowledge. We experience it as a yearning. We experience it like as a hunger, an urge. Some of us would call it a call, but others would just, that sense that something is messed up here and I want it to be better. And it's like, if you're having that experience, then it is within you. You in fact do have a foot in both camps, and you know, probably the only thing between where you are and your ability to actualize that and bring people along with you is some other story from your life that, you know, got adapted, and now you're like, oh well, I could never do that because, you know, I don't right, but Moses, well, you know, I'm not really that good a public speaker. Okay, we'll send Aaron, right? You know. So I would take this even a step further to say, I think, and this goes back, I mean, when you and I get into the, you know, the God language or the language of faith to say the divine is within each of us, the divine spark in each of us knows when something's out. We know it, we yearn it, we want it more than we want to take our next breath. And I would challenge all of our listeners and say that the divine spark is not within you for no reason. You know, it's trying to awaken something in you and potentially in the people around you. So find the people who have the same tug. Find your tribe. The problems we're facing today are bigger than any one of us is going to be able to tackle. So find your tribe. Find your tribe and go ahead and be miscreants. That could be a healthy thing in an unhealthy society.
Thanks for coming along on the L.J. Barnes. The
as always, Chris.
The meaning
you
of social health.
Come along with trains I would not want to miss for all the tea in China. That was truly fantastic, and now I can't wait to go back and read the article.
Yeah, if you can find it, it's written in hieroglyphics on papyrus somewhere.
Excellent. Well, whatever. Chris, stay curious.
Go deep
and shine light.
Shine light. Our show today is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon. Please join our generous donors on Patreon for as little as a dollar a week. You can support the work that is happening here on One in God's Name. We give a great shout out to our great associate producer, Brandon. And Shayna, what else? Oh,
you can
sign up for our website.
Yes.
No, you don't need to sign up for
you can
the website.
Sign up for our website on our website. You can sign up to receive What in God's Name right into your inbox. You can find previously recorded shows. You can find the trailer that Chris and I created that kind of gets to the heart of why we do what we do on our website at whatingods.com, which is Chris,
W-H-A-T-I-N-G-O-D-S.
This is tough to do on Zoom, yeah.
It is indeed. It's great to see you, Shayna.
Always great to see you, Chris.